Hey guys, are you ready to transform your mind so you can transform your life? Coach Mirna brings you one-on-one coaching and expert guests weekly to help you to grow. Because happiness is the progressive realization of a worthy goal.
Looking for personal growth? Let's do it.
Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling superfood smoothies or offering organic omega-3s, Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform got you covered. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/transform, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/transform to take your business to the next level today.
Are you aware of the revolution that has taken place in fasting that helps weight loss, mental and physical performance, and gut health? Well, it's called Prolong. Prolong is a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making cells believe they're fasting. And all this starts with Prolong's 5-day program, snacks, soups, and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasting state. Right now, Prolong is offering Transform Your Mind listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonglife.com/transform for this special offer.
Welcome back to the Transform Your Mind to Transform Your Life radio podcast and television show. I'm your host, Life Coach Brenda Young, and sitting in the guest chair today is Dr. Amani Ballour. Dr. Ballour and I are going to be talking on the topic, understanding the plight of women and children in war zones. Welcome, Dr. Ballour.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. All right, so let me give you guys a brief introduction to Dr. Ballour and our topic today. Dr. Amani Ballour is a renowned Syrian pediatrician and human rights activist. She's best known for her work during the Syrian Civil War, where she managed an underground hospital known as the Cave in Eastern Ghouta. Her leadership and dedication during this time were the subject of an Oscar-nominated documentary titled The Cave, released in 2019. Dr. Ballour was awarded the Council of Europe's Human Rights Prize in 2020 for her humanitarian work. Her experience from running an underground hospital during the Syrian conflict to facing chemical attacks and her eventual displacement underscored the critical issues faced by civilians in war zones, particularly women and children. These crises are not only unthinkable, but they are happening right now in Ukraine. They're happening in Israel and Gaza. And 12 years after the fighting began, they're still happening in Syria. Dr. Ballour's story highlights the urgent need for global awareness and action. And you know what? I am so honored to be talking to you, Dr. Ballour, and to be highlighting and bringing global awareness to this issue. So I want to start off by talking about what it's like running a children's hospital during the war. And I'm assuming the word cave means that it's underground and you're hearing the shelling and the war on top. That I can't think of anything more stressful as a doctor, as a mom. So can you share what that experience was like?
Well, you know, it's very hard to be always underground, to make a hospital underground, to work with the children in a war zone, like bombing, shelling, starving. Everything was difficult. It wasn't only children hospital. It was a hospital for everyone. But I was working mostly with children in a clinic, and also a lot of casualties after bombing were children. So it's really hard to see children are being, you know, hurt and crying, hungry. I remember many, many children, you know, it's very hard to forget them. When I ask a child about their pain, especially the casualties, the wounded children, they say they forgot, you know, sometimes their wounds, the blood, they forget everything. And they said, I'm hungry. Do you have something to eat? We were in besieged area, you know, we had like very limited resources, very, you know, some food, not enough for, we were nearly 500,000 people and more than 100,000 child. So everything was difficult for these children. I remember when I heard the bombing, the fear in that children's eyes. I remember everything about them, the children who had cancer, especially. And we have nothing for them, no chemical therapy, nothing. I mean, in besieged area, in underground hospital, it doesn't supposed to be a hospital. It just was like a basement underground. But because the hospitals were targets for the bombing, we move underground to just protect the health workers, the, you know, the medical devices and the patients. So we started working in that place. It's dark. It's unhealthy for everyone, not only for children. But yeah, that was the only place that we can work in. And we received children all the time there. We sometimes, you know, try to be kind with the children, try to help them as we can, as possible. But it was very hard because we don't have enough medicine, don't have enough medical supplies, medical devices. Sometimes we don't have the diagnostic tools to know what the children are suffering from. So yeah, working with children is the most, I mean, there's no words to describe this.
Yeah, I know. I know. There's no words to describe it. Yes, because you don't want to see children suffer and, you know, asking for food. And wow. So how long did this continue for? I mean, we're saying now that the bombing is still going on for 12 years. So how long were you in this underground cave with the children?
Well, this hospital started in 2012, and I started working at it. And we left the area in 2018, so nearly 6 years or a little less. And I managed this hospital for 2 years. I became the manager between 2016 till 2018 when we left.
Wow. So did most of the kids survive, or what was the outcome of the hospital?
I can say, I mean, most of them didn't survive. Because many, many victims from the kids, I remember, especially when the chemical attack happened in 2013, it was like very big attack by sarin gas. The Syrian regime targeted 2 cities from the area. And I remember like nearly maybe 10,000 people who inhaled the poisonous gas and who died. Nearly, we can't say, you know, the correct number, but nearly 1,500 or 1,400, we don't know. I mean, no one can know. But I remember many, many children were between the victims. I remember seeing the children were suffocating. And, you know, they quickly died because, you know, it's like sarin gas. It's something that they can't deal with. And we were only a few doctors, some volunteers. We try to do our best, but we don't have enough medicine. We don't have oxygen for them. And they were, a lot of people are suffocating at the same time. So we don't have enough staff to work with them. So we try to help. We help only some people, but many, many died that night.
Wow. This is, you know, we can never really understand what it's like to be living under these conditions. You know, you've got to, it's one of the things that, you know, you can just imagine the horror, but you know, until you've been in a situation like that, you really cannot really comprehend it. You know, like you had to witness all that. And
some people, like yourselves, are, you know, are born to be you know, the activist or born to bring about change, and your work is being recognized. So, you know, being on shows like this and talking about this and bringing it to the awareness of, you know, global consciousness. Yeah, that is very sad. So I'm glad that someone recognized your work, and there was a documentary in 2019, you know, showcasing this, and did that help as far as getting medicine and supplies and things like that? How did that Oscar nominated documentary help the cause?
Well, it was very necessary to us to show the world outside, to show everyone what happens here, especially when the Syrian regime and its allies were saying that we are fighting terrorist people. I mean, we are not terrorists. We were innocent people, civilians, many, many children, many babies who died because lack of formula, for example. So it was important to show the world, to tell the truth through this documentary. And I was, you know, my goal of filming this and showing the people is telling the truth and to try to bring help to the Syrian people. We forced to leave after, in 2018, we forced to leave the area, the Eastern Ghouta, which was in the countryside of Damascus. But we left to northwest Syria. There's a big area also out of the Syrian regime control. But there's millions of people living there, millions of displaced people, because they left their, you know, their cities, their towns because of the Syrian regime. They fled them and they live in northwest now. So millions of people, many, many of them living in camps with very hard circumstances. I mean, in camps, it's a very difficult life. You can imagine how it means, I mean, to live in a tent, especially in winter, for example. Many times we see the tents are burned because they use something for heating, something unhealthy. Sometimes it flies with the wind. Sometimes it's drawn by rain or snow. And you can imagine if I tell you there's like 100 family and they have one bathroom. So it's very hard. I mean, they need to stand in a queue to go to the toilet. It's very hard life. They have nothing and no hope. So we try, you know, always to speak up through this documentary and through my book now. I wanted this book to be a reminder of Syria. But many organizations are helping in Syria, but it's never enough. Because there are millions, they need everything, they have nothing, many children. I mean, there's nearly 2 million child without schools, without education. They just can't go to school. So you can imagine the needs. It's very huge. And there's nothing changed in the situation in Syria. I mean, the president who committed all these crimes stay as a president. With his family, they control everything in Syria now. So nothing changed, and the humanitarian aids are not enough. So the situation is still pretty bad.
Well, yes, you said you did the documentary and now your book, and you're doing podcasts. And you know, some people just need to hear the situation, and their humanitarian consciousness will come in and offer help. So, you know, I'm sorry to hear that the documentary didn't really make a dent, because there's so many people that are in need. So let's make an intention that, you know, your work and the Syrian people, you know, some governments or some rich person would send aid and help. I remember, I think Canada was accepting some Syrians as refugees. Was that true?
Yes, they accept some refugees. I mean, not only Canada, many countries also, especially in Europe. But, you know, like millions of people, where can they go?
Yeah, they're not going to take millions, right? At least, well, I mentioned that because, some countries are opening their borders to help.
Mm-hmm.
shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. This allergy season has been tough for me. The pollen number was the highest it's been in over 3 years. My nose was stuffed up, then it was running. I had the awful nasal drip in my throat and the sneezing. I was miserable. Luckily for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. If you are ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Remember, use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. These days, a lot of people are learning about the benefits of fasting, like weight loss and gut health, but can't do the not eating part. Well, that's exactly why Prolong was created. Prolong is a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making cells believe they're fasting. Researched and developed for decades at the University of Southern California Longevity Institute, Prolong helps promote healthy blood sugar, support cardiovascular health, and reduce abdominal fat. But Prolong isn't a diet. It is science. Science-based and Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. And all this starts with Prolong's 5-day program that includes snacks, soups, and beverages, all designed to keep your body in a fasting state. When I first heard about Prolong, I was so excited to try it because I know that fast over 3 days allows your body to get to autophagy, which is where the body recycles and resets. But I can never fast for 3 days on my own. I was able to do a 5-day fast with Prolong without ever feeling hungry. The first day, my fasting glucose levels were down 20 points, and by day 5, I had lost 6 pounds. It's no wonder why thousands of doctors now recommend Prolong to support healthy blood sugar and cardiovascular health. Right now, Prolong is offering Transform Your Mind listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonglife.com/transform. That's prolonglife.com/transform for this special offer. That's prolonglife.com/transform.
All right. Well, listen, that's the purpose of this conversation is to, you know, bring global awareness and some action, as you said in your bio, to this problem. But I want to, you know, switch back now to you as a doctor and you being in the position that you are to help, you know, the children as a pediatrician. What is it like in Syria for a woman to become a doctor, for a woman to become a lawyer, for a woman to become educated? What did you have to overcome to become a pediatrician?
Well, it's not all of Syria, I mean, are the same situation. I mean, I'm from the countryside of Damascus, from conservative area, like the community have, you know, these traditions and customs, many, you know, thoughts against women. I mean, to be a doctor, it's okay. To be a lawyer, it's okay. It's not very bad. But some people maybe can talk about women when they become something different. For example, I wanted to be an engineer, but no, people said, no, it's not for women. You can't be an engineer. I mean, when I started working at the hospital as a pediatrician, it was okay for the people, you know, and being a nurse is okay, for example. But to manage the hospital, to be a manager, especially in a hospital that have men work there, so I refused this. They said, no, it's not for women. You can't do that. And they always have this that women can't do that. They didn't try, woman. I mean, you don't give them, give us the opportunity to try us, I mean, to know if we can or not. But they always say, no, women can't do that. And I was actually, you know, I know my community. It wasn't like a surprise to hear this, but the surprise was when I heard some young people, educated people who say the same. I mean, I remember a friend of mine, he was working, he's a lab technician, was working with me before I became the manager. He's very young, he's educated, and he said, we have no problem with you. You are our friend, but we don't want a woman to be our manager. So that was, you know, I just want to say, no, not you. You're science like this. But yeah, that was a surprise for me. And I heard this from many people after this. It wasn't, I mean, a shock to me, but I wanted to prove that I can do this and many women can do this. I wanted to take this opportunity to change the situation of women, to change the thoughts about women and the customs, because I believe it's not true. And actually, it's not about religion, as they claim, and many people, they claim, no, it's the religion will prevent you to be. No, it's not the religion. I'm Muslim, right? No, I mean. So yeah, they have only these thoughts. So I started working, being the manager of the hospital, try to do my best to make the hospital improved and be good, to prove for these people that I can do this. And not any women, but a lot of women, if you try, they can do this.
Of course they can. Well, listen, women just have to fight for every single morsel. And I'm positive that, you know, in your country, then it's a little worse than in the West. But in the West, it's the same thing. You would think that they're more progressive and the younger people, but women are still being shut out of managerial roles and to be a CEO because you're right, the men don't want a woman being their boss. And I'm glad you said it's not religion. It's not religion. It's just macho, I guess, and something to do with the male dominance, I guess, whatever it is. But the good news is that you persevered because you said that you did become the manager and you managed the hospital for 2 years. And I'm sure that you did a far superior job than any man could have done, because one of the great things about women is they think that we're weak, but we're stronger. we can, you know, we've got the mindset, we've got the strength, we've got intuition. And then we've got nurturing. I mean, who better to run a hospital than a woman that can offer all those things? You know, the men could probably only offer maybe a plan or something. They're because they're in masculine energy. So that's amazing. Now, you also have a connection to Malala, and Malala had to fight for women's education. So it's probably in a different area than you were, because you mentioned that, you know, in your country, or at least in the part of the country that you were born, it was okay for a woman to be a doctor and a lawyer or whatever, but they say that the engineer, which is they consider a man's job, you couldn't have. But so what was it like, you know, being interviewed by Malala, and why did she want to talk to you?
I wasn't actually interviewed by Malala. I am really respect and love Malala and her story and admire her. And I read her book, so it was, I mean, amazing. And I wish I can speak to her, but I didn't.
Okay, all right. So you weren't interviewed by her? I didn't get that.
No, unfortunately, no.
All right. Well, I saw that in your work. But all right. So let's talk now about understanding the plight of women and children in war zones. Right now, we've got several wars going on. We've got the Ukraine. We've got Israel and Gaza. You mentioned about, you know, a while ago that people were thinking that, you know, all Muslims are terrorists, and But you wanted to show with your documentary that the women and children, and even men, you know, civilian men, experience a lot of hardship during this time. So what did you want to share about critical issues that are happening to civilians right now in the war in Syria, you know, Gaza, Ukraine, and Israel?
Exactly. It's heartbreaking to see this happening again. I wanted, from telling our stories and our experience in Syria, to raise awareness, to tell the people about the horror of wars and how the children and the innocent people pay the price for the war. They have nothing to do with this. They don't understand what's happening. You can just see them hungry, afraid, scared. So I wanted to raise awareness so this cannot happen again. But to see this happening again, it's really break my heart. I mean, I can't watch videos and so see the news in Ukraine. And especially when I saw the doctors in Gaza were working in the same circumstances that we were working. They have no enough resources, a lot of casualties, you know, they can deal with everyone. I live the same experience, and maybe my experience was easier than what happened in Gaza. So this is really heartbreaking. And I wish this stop, and I wish everyone understand that, you know, this war will bring nothing, will not solve any problem. I mean, they have to sit on the table and talk to find a solution. And they can do this without using these weapons, without killing many children. I was able to share my experience with health workers in Ukraine, and I'm happy that I was able, you know, to tell them about our work and how to try, you know, to protect themselves, their hospitals, through my organization, Syrian American Medical Society. They were make training for Ukrainian health workers to tell them about Syrian experience. So I was happy to tell this, but I wish this war stop. I mean, it's endless wars with no results. So I wish it stop, and they understand that it's just, you know, killing the innocent people.
Yeah, there's powers that start the war don't care. You know, I see what Putin is doing to Ukraine. They're bombing civilians. They're bombing hospitals. Yeah, I mean, they don't care. Yes. Anyway, yes. You know, it's good to highlight that. But I think the news does do a good job of talking about when they bomb civilians. You know, I've seen them bombing apartment buildings and hospitals, and you know, yeah. So, and they're talking about, you know, charging these leaders that do that with war crimes, because it is war crimes. I mean, you're right. The war serves no purpose. And it goes on forever, because the other country is not just going to lay down their weapons. They're going to keep fighting, and it's going to go on and go on forever. You're talking about the Syrian war has been going on for 12 years. I think the war in the Middle East has been going on for decades too. It just kills people. Yeah. And yeah. So, all right. So what did you, your book is called The Cave, The Secret Underground Hospital and One Woman's Story of Survival in Syria. So tell us about your book. You know, are you talking about the experience, the same thing that you talked about in the documentary, or are you expanding on some issues?
Well, the documentary, to me, it was short and it didn't tell the whole story. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. And I thought a lot before telling this story through the book. It's very hard to write a book about this hard experience. I mean, try to remember everything again. Many things, you know, I can never forget, but a lot of things to remember the details, the children, to describe them, the faces of the children, their cries, their wounded. And that was happening every day in Syria, and to remember every massacre. I mean, for example, chemical attack, warplanes attacks. Sometimes they targeted primary schools, sometimes hospitals. To remember this again and write this with details. To remember, for example, when they bombed my hospital, the cave, and they killed three of my colleagues. I was sitting with them. I mean, to tell this story again, it's very hard to me. I thought a lot, but then I said, I have to tell this story. It's my responsibility to tell the truth, to tell what's happening there and what's still happening, to remind of Syria and to tell the victims' stories, the children's stories. Many children died because they had their dreams. They were, you know, they were dreaming of better life and they deserve this better life, but they just died and no one knew about them. I felt like it's my responsibility to tell their stories. And I started this book, you know, from my childhood, to tell how was it before the Syrian revolution and before the war started. I talked about my family. I highlighted on the early marriage because my three oldest sisters get married very early. And, you know, I have children. So I wanted to tell these stories also because I believe it's important for everyone to know.
This new year, take your business to the next level with a Shopify online store. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to, did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/transform, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/transform now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
And then I talked about the demonstrations in Syria, the protests, how people were really innocent and they just demand human rights. Okay, we have no human rights. I talked about the dictatorship in Syria, which lasted for more than 50 years. So that was very important to me. And I focused on this war zone time because this is the goal of writing this book, of telling this story. And I'm grateful for my co-author, Rania Uzid, because she wrote this book in very, you know, a great way. So yeah, that was the main goal of telling this story and also to spot a light on the refugees' suffering. I'm very lucky because I didn't leave Syria through the sea. I mean, many people go through the sea and they're drowning. Many people lost their children drowning in the sea in front of their eyes. Many people were starving, spent a few days in a small boat, I mean, without food, to arrive to the other side or to Europe, just trying to find better life, to be safe, to protect their children. So the refugees are really suffering, especially who live in camps in neighboring countries of Syria, like Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon. They're really suffering. And you can imagine why they have to take their children and to go through the sea by small boat. I mean, if it was really hard to live in the camps or somewhere in Syria. So yeah, that was the situation of the refugees. And I myself was a little man, you know, and I suffer and I have challenges and problems to start a new life. You know, it takes with me 4 years to start my new life now in the US. So it's not easy for, and I'm lucky, as I told you, so it's not easy for everyone. I wanted to tell all these stories so not only just to tell the story and to tell the suffering of the people. I wish the people who read this book try to help, try to do something. I mean, if you believe that you can help, so you can help. You can do something, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Human suffering. Wow. You know, we're sometimes we're just lucky where we were born. Yeah, you know, the people in North America that have all these luxuries and they still complain. And you were talking about, yeah, you're leaving a place where, you know, trying to stay alive and then have to watch your children drown in the sea. Wow, that is absolutely heartbreaking. But I still don't understand how can the general population help? Are you aiming at this conversation at governments, or are you aiming this conversation with somebody like me or anyone that's listening? What would you like us to do?
Yeah, I mean, everyone can help. Speak up for Syria. Make a pressure on the politicians so we can change this criminal president in Syria and his families. You can donate for Syria. There's many organizations are supporting, like education, health, and many, many fields in Syria. So people can donate for Syria. People can talk to the parliament members. I mean, everything can help. Just if you speak, if you can do nothing, just to speak about Syria, tell everyone about people suffering. I believe it's a responsibility for a human being to help each other. It's not something that you want to do or not. It's not volunteering job. No, you have to do this. Maybe, you know, sometimes we are safe now. Our kids are around us. They are safe. They are warm. But our other people are not. So maybe we sometimes you or everyone suffer from something, have like maybe natural disaster or something. So you need help. You can feel how frustrating it is if you see other people don't care. We have to care about each other.
Yeah, that's important. Now, I want to circle back to the Muslim connection. You said that you're in the United States, and there after 9/11, there was this pushback against Muslims. Because I don't know, so I have to ask you, what is the immigration policy now as far as helping Muslim refugees, even, you know, not necessarily just from Syria, but how is that happening?
Well, when Trump was the president, we were banned of coming to the U.S., and I wanted to come here before this. I arrived here in December 2021. But before this, I couldn't come. It was a little hard to get visa, but I got visa because the documentary was nominated for the Oscars. So it's
important. Well, that helped. I mean, that's one thing.
It helped. It tells a lot of people the story. Yeah, and I came here, but I couldn't come with my husband. They said you can come alone only because they don't want us to stay here. So I came alone in 2020, and then I went back to Europe. But after this, Trump went, Muslims are able now to come. But I mean, in general, the U.S. didn't receive a lot of refugees. Not only Muslims and a lot of Syrians, I mean, they don't receive a lot of refugees like Europe. There's like in Germany, nearly 1 million, maybe 800,000 people, Syrian people went to Germany. In France, also a lot of people. So the U.S. didn't receive a lot of refugees. And we, you know, we were hoping that they can receive more. I mean, you know, we don't want to leave our country. This is not our goal. But that was the situation, and it lasted for more than 12 years, 13 years maybe now. So it's very hard to live there. It's unsafe. It's unsafe. This is what people look for, you know, for their safety, for their children. That's why, I mean, we couldn't get rid of this president and the leaders of the war in Syria. So we had to leave. And I really wanted to stay. I didn't want to leave my country, but I mean, I was forced to leave. So yeah, we were wishing that the U.S. receive more and other countries who can help and have, you know, the power and the resources to help more refugees.
Yeah, yes. Like I said, I was aware that the United States wasn't helping a lot, which is why I mentioned Canada, because I remember when Canada opened its doors and the United States didn't, because again, 9/11 left a bad taste in their mouth, I guess. But I'm glad that the door is starting to open, and the Muslim ban is no longer in place, and maybe, you know, the outcome from your book, because you have this attention, the outcome from your book would be, you know, since you're highlighting the plight of the Syrian refugees and the Syrian plights and being unsafe and, you know, having people see their children drown when they're trying to leave, you know, we are all humans. And, you know, maybe someone that can make a difference will make a difference. And any small thing definitely helps. But like you said, it's Ukraine and what's going on in Gaza, and I'm sure there's more wars. Those are the only ones that we're talking about here. But yes, human suffering is going on in a lot of countries. So if I were to ask you, when do you want people to walk away with after reading your book? Would it be to help? Would that be the one word answer, or there's more?
It's important to me, to us as Syrians, to tell the truth. I mean, this is very important because, you know, you can hear lies all the time. So they try to change the history when the Syrian regime and it's a lie. So we have to write the history and to tell our stories, which is our reality, which is the circumstances that we lived in. So this is very important. Know the truth from this book and from other stories, which was, you know, coming from Syria. And I wish people to help also. And as I said, they can help. I mean, try to do what you can. And this is enough when everyone do their parts, you know. So we all can do a lot. We can change the situation.
Right. So that's awesome. So I'm going to leave a task for you. At the end of this interview, if you can email me some links to, you know, organizations that are accepting donations. So because, you know, the layman person can only really give money. You know, we have no, you know, yeah, we can write letters to Congress or whatever, but that's not going to work as fast as money, right? Aid. So yeah, send me some links to some organizations and I will post it on the show page so people can help with money. So as we wrap up, you know, how can the audience learn more to support your cause? Like, you're going to send me links to for them to offer, you know, financial support. But do you have a website, for instance, that it's accepting help or tell our listeners how they can support your cause, get a copy of your book, and if you have any, if you're on social
here. Well, you know, I joined now the Syrian American Medical Society because I believe that it's a good way to help people. I like their jobs. They were supporting the Kyiv hospital, and they're supporting now in Syria, other countries, also in Ukraine, in Gaza. So this is the way that I find is good for me now while I'm in the U.S. to help. So, you know, if you read this book, you know the whole story, try to follow these organizations. Like this organization, actually, it's really hard to tell you there's a lot of organizations who support in Syria. That's why I wanted to write, you know, their websites in at the back of my book. But it was really hard to write all of them. So I'm prepared if people make their research, you know, try to know more. if you want to support education for children, we want to support hospitals, you want to support refugees in Greece, for example, in Ukraine. So there's many ways. Follow this organization on your social media and you'll find a lot about Syria. There's, you know, a lot, and also a lot of stories you can hear from other people, other journalists, writers.
Okay. All right. So they just search about, you know, so I'll put some links in the show page myself. I'll do some research. And of course, I'll link out to your book. Do you have a website?
No, I don't have a website, but there's for my organization.
Okay. All right. And what about social media?
Yeah, I have my social media.
Under your name, or what's the handle?
Well, it's under my name. It's Amirani Ballour, yeah. Facebook, okay. Right. And Instagram.
Okay. All right. So that's what I will do. I will do my part. I will definitely, put all this information on the show page. So somebody that is listening can go on, and I will also definitely, give some financial assistance myself to definitely the refugees. That would be because, you know, the story that you've just told me just breaks my heart. And, you know, a lot of times we live in our comfortable little worlds and, you know, these things are out there and that you don't really bring them in here. But when I'm sitting here talking to you, I've brought it in here, and I'm hoping that the listeners would bring it in here in their hearts. And offer help, you know? So that's great. So this was, thank you for being on the show, Dr. Amirani, and, sharing this heartfelt story. Thank you for writing your book. And I'm glad that you said that you didn't start it at the war. You started at families and understood that, you know, letting the readers understand what it's like to live in, your country and the family dynamics and, yeah, getting married early and things like that. All the things that plagues women in general, right? So, I'm so glad that I was able to speak to you and, bring some awareness to this topic. So as we wrap up, any last words?
Thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity to let me reach to the people and tell them my story. Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Well, you're very welcome. And it's my pleasure to do my part. You know, as soon as I saw your topic, I said immediately that I wanted to be involved to help you share this story. And as you said, share the truth so that people can have a personal view of what's happening to women, children, civilians, people that didn't cause the war, but they call it collateral damage. And maybe the World Organization can do some laws that prevent these things from happening. Because I don't know if there is right now, but you know, they definitely need to be highlighted and showcased. So thank you, Dr. Amirani, for being on the show. Thank you guys for tuning in to this week's episode of Transforming Your Mind to Transform Your Life. This was a transformative conversation with Dr. Ballour. So run out and support her and support her cause by definitely picking up a copy of her book and hearing the truth about her story and the story of the Syrian people. You know, contribute by either a financial donation, or if you're in the political space, start the conversation about helping more of these refugees come to the United States. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Dr. Ballour. And until next time, namaste.